when the McAllister family left on their Christmas vacation.
Did we miss the flight?
No, you just made it.
Yeah!
They forgot one small thing.
Have yourself.
I have a terrible feeling. Christmas.
Did you lock up?
Let yourself be light.
Do we set the timers on the lights?
Mm-hmm. What else could we be forgetting?
Our troubles will be ours.
Kevin!
Home Alone.
Do you listen to the NSYNC Christmas album? That one's good.
No, I have not. You know, I can punch that one up for tomorrow.
Okay, you're going to have to, because there's one very sexy song on that album, and I'm just like, NSYNC was horny. When they were... Let me find it for you. Hold on. What's it called? NSYNC Christmas. NSYNC Christmas. There you are. Oh, yeah. It's called Home for Christmas. And it's called, is it The Only Gift? Is this what it is? I'll find out. But on that album, there's one really, really horny song. And I'm like, this is supposed to be a family album. And I was blasting the whole thing while we were decorating. And that horny song came on. and I could, like, visibly see my parents kind of tense up, and they're just like, what is this? Like, it was just really awkward, and I switched it over and we listened to Mariah Carey on repeat instead. Oh, yeah. but you know, that's a good out. That's a, you know, if you need some help in that department, yeah, NSYNC can be there for you.
Is your Christmas horny enough?
Inside, looking at the Jersey skyline, she's in a real bad mood. Does she get right back to you? She got the longest stay, and it's a great long highway. She's in a real bad mood. Does she get right back to you? Hey, oh, son. Hey, oh, son. Hey, oh, son. The city was older than that, so we got to around. Hey, oh, son. Hey, oh, son.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Probably Should Have Known Better, a podcast where we celebrate comedy that maybe hasn't aged very well. I'm Nadia Vasquez, one of your co-hosts, and I am joined, as always, by the Marv to my Harry, Tony Ginocchio.
Wait, is Harry Joe Pesci?
Yeah.
No, I want to be Joe Pesci. Fuck this.
I'm shorter than you.
Yeah, that is... That's,
logically speaking, that's it makes sense.
Very
fair. Oh, wait, but you're Italian. That trumps...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That trumps height. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Italian trumps height. You heard it here first, folks.
So you're the Harry to my Marv.
Yes.
Yes. There you go.
Well, thanks, Nadia, for that intro. It's great to be here.
It was great. You know, it was the second one I did.
Great to be here. Let me be the first to say happy holidays, which I'm thrilled to be able to say again with our new president.
Yes,
and
love it.
And we have a Christmas episode for you today, folks. And I mean, come on, it's obvious what movie we're doing. It's Home Alone, 1990,
yay,
directed by Chris Columbus. Yet another Chris Columbus selection.
And yet another Mark Radcliffe production.
Yet another
which
Mark Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe's dad.
Production. And this season we are only doing movies that showed up in the top 10, their respective box office. Not only did that film do that, this film was the highest grossing live action comedy ever made when it came out. And it held that record for 21 years.
What broke it?
The Hangover Part 2.
Oh, wow, a sequel.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, obviously, like, there is, I would say, a 0% chance you have not seen this film or don't know what it's about. Starring Macaulay Culkin, the wonderful Catherine O'Hara, Daniel Stern, and Italian ex-American hero, Academy Award nominee Joe Pesci. Not for this movie.
No. You know, this is the only movie I've ever seen Joe Pesci in, because everything else he's in is way too violent.
That's fair.
So I have no idea if he's good in any other movie.
He's fantastic. Absolutely love him. You might like My Cousin Vinny. That one's not violent.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. That's
the one that he got the Oscar nom for, right?
No, he got the Oscar nom for The Irishman. He got it last year. So everybody,
I like that you were totally serious and nerding out about it, but it was really a joke.
Oh, okay. So everybody knows what this movie is, but Nadia, can you run down the plot for me?
I would love to. So Kevin McAllister's family is getting ready to go on a trip to Paris, right? And Kevin tries to get help packing because he's 8 years old and he doesn't know how to pack. And he wants to eat some dinner because some pizza just got delivered. But guess what? His shitty older brother ate his pizza. That was the inciting incident. A cheese pizza was eaten.
The first domino.
The first domino of many. And Kevin attacks his brother. And a pandemonium ensues. And Kevin is sent to the attic to sleep there because apparently he doesn't have his own room. And so what ends up happening is the family leaves him home alone. And doesn't even remember him until they're halfway to Paris. In that time, Kevin thinks that he made his family disappear thanks to a Christmas miracle, and he's stoked as hell. And all of a sudden, unfortunately, two burglars that go by the Wet Bandits are casing the entire neighborhood and end up hitting his house. And you know, everybody knows what ensues. Some pranks, some shenanigans.
Essentially 20 minutes of a child torturing two men.
Exactly. And there's also a subplot about a scary neighbor that teaches us not to judge others.
Yeah.
And that family is the most important thing in the world, even if they're shitty and toxic.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one because, first of all, what everybody knows this movie for, like Nadia said, is the kind of climactic scene, which doesn't happen until 20 minutes from the end, which is where
right.
the burglars try to break into Kevin's house, and Kevin has set up a series of Rube Goldberg-style traps. And there are several moments in this film where all of the main characters should have died.
Right.
But this is, you know, I have not seen this movie in years. We mm-hmm. talk about movies that have aged poorly. I don't think this is a bad movie.
No, it's great. This is better than A Christmas Story.
Oh, 100%. Sure. It is a movie for children. There's no question. Yes. Mm-hmm. It is dated, for sure.
Yes.
For a few reasons, which we can get into. This, like I said, made just unbelievable shitloads of money. It came out in 1990. At the time, because it came out in December 1990, it was actually the number 3 highest grossing film of the year behind Ghost and Pretty Woman, with a total gross of $285 million. But because it stayed in theaters into 1991, it ended up becoming, like I said, highest grossing live action comedy ever made. It was nominated for 2 Golden Globes, one for Best Actor for Macaulay Culkin, who was 10 when this movie came out. And then one for Best Picture, although at the Golden Globes it would have been Best Comedy specifically. It was also nominated for 2 Oscars, both of the music Oscars, Best Score for John Williams, and then Best Song for Somewhere in My Memory, which is the song from Home Alone that everybody knows.
Whoa, I didn't know that it was an original. I mean, I don't know Christmas carols. I grew up listening to like mariachi music, so I didn't know that it was specific to this movie.
Yeah. And then the last thing I'll say about this movie is, you know, although it was directed by Chris Columbus, the screenplay is by, of all people, John Hughes.
Yeah.
Mr. Breakfast Club himself, clearly writing this film because he wanted to buy a house. and probably bought 2 houses up.
He probably bought the kind of house that the family has in this movie.
Yeah, and so because it's a John Hughes film, right, it's set in Hersher, Illinois, which is his fictional suburb where all of his movies are set, which is this, you know, really upscale, the same place Risky Business was set, basically, or Ferris Bueller's Day Off or anything like that. It's really upscale. North Shore Chicago suburb. He also, around this time, wrote another screenplay for a film called Baby's Day Out.
That movie was so bad.
And which is also about a child, in this case a baby, on his own in the Chicago area being pursued by Italians. In this case, Joe Mantegna and Joe Pantoliano. So I don't know what the fuck Hughes has against Italians, but he did write
a personal vendetta. Yeah, for sure.
He did write a screenplay that seemed to work because this movie made shitloads of money. If I can just kind of give one more aside, I like to think of this movie as kind of a religious and political allegory for the struggle in America between Protestants, represented by the Waspy McAllister family, and Catholics, represented by Joe Pesci, who is an Italian in Chicago, as they fight over kind of political control in the American arena. Historically, not a place where Catholics have had a ton of electoral success, especially for the presidency, but, you know, the tides are turning as we speak with our second ever Catholic president, Joe Biden, set to take office, and I assume fully submit the country to the Pope's rule.
I stopped listening halfway through that, but shut up. oh my God, I love that.
What about
I didn't know that much about Catholicism when it comes to you know, the socio-political like status of Chicago, and it's a lot. But I'm glad that I like to listen to this podcast because I learn, you know.
What about 1990 though? I think that's a new year for us, Nadia, and I would
is a new year.
Interested to learn what else was happening when Home Alone came out.
Dude, 1990 ruled. It was a sick year. I was only two, as were you. The 49ers won the Super Bowl that year. I have to mention sports when it's related to things that my mom likes, because when she hears it on a podcast, she, instead of saying, "Why do you guys laugh so loud?" she says, "That was really cool. I didn't know that." So 49ers won the Super Bowl that year. Times Person of the Year was George H.W. Bush. And he was quoted to say that year, "I do not like broccoli."
Oh.
I haven't liked it since I was a little kid and my mother made me eat it.
That was like a whole fucking thing, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was like the first time. It was like Twitter would have destroyed it at that time.
Yeah.
But instead it was like newspapers or whatever. And he says, "I'm the president of the United States, and I'm not going to eat any more broccoli." So, and that man created the man who created 9/11. Dumbass First Lady Barbara Bush apparently criticized The Simpsons as the dumbest thing she'd ever seen that year. And Marge wrote her a letter in character politely telling her not to be so judgmental and explaining that her family was trying their best. And First Lady Mrs. Is it Mrs.?
Mrs. How do you... Bush?
Yeah. Is it First Lady Mrs. Bush?
I think you would just call her Barbara Bush. I think that's fine. She's dead. She's not going to sue us.
Okay. Mrs. Bush later apologized and said she had a loose tongue, which it's fine.
George H.W. Bush criticized The Simpsons once. I think it may have been when he was campaigning in 88. He was like, I remember that because he gave I don't remember it, but like I remember hearing about it. He gave a stump speech where he was like, "We need a country where families are more like the Waltons and less like The Simpsons." And they played that clip on The Simpsons as like a cold open, and Bart was like, "Hey man, we're like the Waltons. We want the recession to end too," which is actually a pretty good own.
That's really good.
Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah, I mean 1990. There's a lot going on. So let me continue here. The first rap single to ever reach number one in the United States happened that year, and it was unfortunately Ice Ice Baby. A white rapper was the first one who broke that record, unfortunately. Some of the other top songs that year were Michael Bolton's How Am I Supposed to Live Without You, Janet Jackson's Escapade, which is a bop, Taylor Dane's Love Will Lead You Back, which is really good for karaoke, Madonna's Vogue, Wilson Phillips Hold On, and New Kids on the Block Step by Step. So these are very dated songs. You can kind of guess where the top movies fell that year. As Tony mentioned, Home Alone was very, very high grossing, as was Ghost, Pretty Woman, Dances with Wolves, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which ruled. I love that movie. In 1990, Chuck Norris was the first Westerner in documented Taekwondo history to be awarded the rank of 8th degree black belt grandmaster.
Oh, that's good.
big time. Microsoft also included Solitaire in Windows to have people practice the drag and drop, because people weren't very good at that. So that was their way of getting people to train. The World Wide Web / Internet Protocol, the HTTP and WWW language / HTML, was created that year. And the World Health Organization removed homosexuality as a mental illness in May of that year. Additionally,
feels
I found
late.
It feels really late. But you know, when in the scope of things, when we think about that Supreme Court ruling that makes gay marriage legal.
Yeah, and how that's 5 years
ago. That was only
5 years ago. Yeah.
That's fucked up. Time isn't real, but whatever. I learned something very interesting about late night television. So the reason why everything starts at 11:35 is because in 1990, NBC delayed the start time to The Tonight Show by 5 minutes to give their affiliates more time to cover the conflict of the first Gulf War. So once the local stations had those minutes, they never really wanted to give them back. And so that's why late night shows start at
11:35.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on in 1990, but mostly people were, you know, reading a lot of magazines. This was like a big activity. There was no like real internet, so it was like Entertainment Weekly came out that year, and Martha Stewart Living, all of that good stuff. And you know, the big draw was going to the movies.
And if you're going to the movies with your family, you probably weren't seeing Pretty Woman, and you probably weren't seeing Ghost, although Ghost is actually really good.
So good.
I like that movie a lot.
But a little too horny for children.
No, yeah, it's too horny, but but it's good. You were seeing Home Alone, basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so should we get into the movie?
I would love to, and first I would love to know your thoughts on Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Like, my first note is on his character, which is, I would have also left Kevin at home.
Okay. I am going to get on my high horse about this. That child had a horrible family.
Okay. Interesting.
So there is, it is not a surprise that child ended up being fucking horrible. But his family is horrible. And as we continue, I'll point things out. But I think it's really not okay the way everybody is so mean to him and jumps on him, including his mother. And I'm going to say this on record, if anybody ever spoke to my child the way that Uncle Frank.
Yeah, Uncle Frank's a real piece of shit.
Oh, they would be dead. Don't care if they're my sibling or any other relative. They wouldn't have a tongue. Like, it's really fucked up that everyone's just like, you're a disease to this child.
Yeah. Okay, so we do have kind of a chicken and the egg situation where, like, in the early parts of the film, Kevin is being a little shit, but his family is also being shitty to him, so we don't really know if he's the product of that. And I would say my viewing of the film left me thinking he was being a little shit to start. But you didn't ask about that. You asked about Macaulay Culkin.
Yes.
And so the character of Kevin McAllister is 8. They state that in the movie. When this movie came out, Macaulay Culkin was 10, which means he was probably like 9 when they shot it. I think it's I actually like his performance because I think he acts the way a 9-year-old would act if he had gotten a role in the biggest movie in the world. And I mean that as a compliment. It comes across as like, he is definitely hamming it up. He is definitely mugging the camera all the time. But that is what I would fucking do if I was 9 years old in a movie. So, like, it comes across as kind of authentic to me.
Yeah, I think he was great.
Yeah.
His character, okay, so another thing about the movie is that I have to remember that it was written through the perspective of an 8-year-old and not the audience's perspective of what's happening to the 8-year-old, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So that is where I understand the whole, like, he's being a little shit, but his family is being shitty.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was to look at it kind of on the outside of things, I think he did really well for what he was given.
Yes, I would agree
with that.
Which
wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
And that's, like, no disrespect to John Hughes, because, you know, he's a legend.
No,
but
I think John Hughes phoned this one in.
Comparatively, to a lot of other characters. Yeah. This is an interesting choice.
And it's interesting thinking about, like, you know, how dated this movie is. The family literally has a lawn jockey, which it doesn't appear to be a racist one, so that's good, I guess.
Wait, are lawn jockeys racist?
They can't. They can be.
Oh no. Is this a Midwest thing to have a lawn jockey?
I don't know if it's exclusively a Midwest thing, but it's certainly a dated thing. It's you know, they have a little statue of a jockey in front of their house, and you see it because it gets knocked over multiple times when a car pulls up. But though, like, there are versions of that statue from a past era that are just like racialized caricatures.
Oh no.
That people would have in front of their house for fun, I guess. So that part's a little dated, and then like the other thing that really strikes me about this movie that feels dated is like Stranger Danger stuff.
Yeah.
Like and I it's funny to talk about, but I'm like, I was thinking about it as I was watching this film, and my wife used to be a grade school teacher, right? So I asked her, I said, do they still teach, like, don't talk to strangers or anything? And I was like, no, they like kind of go the other way with it now. They tell kids, like, hey, if you're like, you know, if you're in a situation where you need an adult and you're in a public place, you can probably trust most adults to at least find you help. Like, so if you're like lost or something, you know, you can probably ask an adult to help you and be fine.
Well, yeah, because the real danger's online.
Right, yes. And so that's not the mindset of this film. That's not what I was taught when I was in like grade school, because I think we had a different view on like crime and criminals.
Yeah.
Suburban cat burglars, I don't know if they're still a thing.
I think, you know, criminals in that area are probably doing more like online
scams. Yeah, I can see like white collar crime like being really big in Hersher, Illinois, but like Italian men with crowbars and gold teeth.
Here's a question now. Do you think that Kevin's dad is involved with some sort of crime? Because that house is... What does he do?
Let me be clear. Kevin's dad is Pizzagate. He's sex trafficking.
Oh my god.
For the
John
Democratic
Hughes is
going to
sue you. Oh my god.
So all of that said, Nadia described the opening scene. It's Kevin's family, which is a big family, and like his aunt and uncle are there, and they have a big family. So there's like 40 people in this fucking house. They're waiting on pizza. Kevin can't pack. Everybody's yelling at each other.
Okay, that's the other thing. How did they expect an 8-year-old to know how to pack their own bag?
For Paris, for an international flight where you're going to be out for like a week.
He's going to put in, like, a box of Cracker Jacks, like, all his baseball cards, and there's going to be no underwear, and he's going to shit his pants.
One of those paddles with the ball tied to it, he's going to have one of those.
Yeah, and they're like, what did you... He's like, I'm 8.
Fucking hat with a propeller. Like, he's gonna do all that. So, basically, it leads to him having a huge fight with his mom, played by the wonderful Catherine O'Hara.
So good.
Who is great in this? She's great in everything. Glamour magazine literally like ran an article like a week ago, like in 2020, and the tweet was, the mom from Home Alone and Moira from Schitt's Creek are the same person. I'm like, everybody knows that.
Yeah, how old is the person who discovered that? Like 12?
She was actually a very respected comedic actress by the time she did Home Alone.
Yeah, interesting. Well, okay. So to hop back into my soapbox here about this terrible family. So they order the pizza. There's like 12 pizzas. One pizza is cheese, and that's the only one
Insane order.
Yeah, Kevin would eat. And not 20 seconds after they put the pizza down, the entire pizza is gone because his shitty brother hoovered the whole thing just to be a little asshole. And the mom got mad at Kevin. That's the thing where I'm like, okay, like, I see, like, let's talk about this. You ate the entire pizza that wasn't right. What are we going to do? Kind of thing. But I know that that's, you know, not the way that real movies work.
Right. I mean, it's not a real movie. I mean, it's a real movie in that it's a movie someone made and you probably saw it in the theaters.
Right, right, right.
But
oh my God, this is like the perfect time to be like, are we in a simulation?
But it's not a real movie in the sense that it's not written from like a believable adult point of view, and it's not meant to
be. Right, right, right. It's not meant to be.
And
yes, yes, yes.
Like, I guess if I was being charitable to Catherine O'Hara's character, I would say like, there's 40 people in her fucking house and everybody's stressed out because they gotta fly the next
right.
day.
Right.
The other person that's in the house is a Chicago police officer, which doesn't make sense because it's the suburbs, but it's a police officer. It should have been the first fucking sign that something was up with this guy, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, I had to Google the Chicago flag because I didn't know what, because it was everywhere.
Well,
I'm
glad you asked, Nadia. See, so just a little side note for our listeners. The Chicago flag consists of a white field, two light blue bars representing the two branches of the Chicago River, and four stars
wow.
representing four events of historical importance in Chicago's history, specifically the founding of Fort Dearborn, the Great Chicago Fire, the First Columbian Exposition, and the Century of Progress Exposition. How Chicago...
Did you know that off the top of your head, or did you write that down?
No,
I
knew
I was going to say something.
I knew it off the top of my head. Had Chicago secured the Olympics for 2016, we would have added a fifth star to the flag.
Wow.
We did not get the Olympics, thank Christ, and so we don't. Anyways, that's Joe Pesci, and he's like, hey,
yeah.
Hey, kid, is there an adult around? I want to make sure he gives me the passcode to your security system or whatever.
It's so sus. It's so sus. He's just standing there waiting for somebody to, you know, obviously he can't welcome himself into the house and go to the kitchen, you know, because it'd be crazy to have a cop go through there and be like, ah, but he just kind of, he could have just left.
He could have called, like,
yeah,
but this is Joe Pesci, and as we'll soon find out, he's not actually a cop, he's a burglar, and he's disguised as a cop as he's casing all these houses so he can figure out, like, how he's going to break into each of them.
Exactly. And nobody notices, and they give him all of the information of their security protocol, which includes lights on a timer and locks on the door. This is pre, you know, Vivint.
Yeah,
all that
ADT.
Yeah.
Actually, ADT was technically around at this point, but not as like a standard home security system.
You would think that Pizzagate Dad would be like, we need to get an alarm system.
No, Pizzagate Dad just has an encrypted hard drive.
Yeah.
And he uses a Tor browser, but that's it.
And he only orders one cheese pizza for his child.
Okay. Leads to this huge fight between Kevin and his mom, specifically where his mom says, you'd feel pretty so Kevin says, I wish I didn't have a family, you're all stupid or whatever, and his mom says, you'd feel pretty sad if you woke up in the morning and you didn't have a family, which is like John Hughes' kids were annoying him that day. And he was like, you know what, I'm gonna write a line of dialogue that I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was kind of doubling down on it a lot and saying, like, no, it would be great.
Yeah.
And one iconic line we didn't say was when he's like, when I get married and have a family, I'm living alone. Which I loved.
That is pretty good.
But he, you know, his family treated him really shitty, so he was saying how he felt.
Yeah.
And they sent him to the attic with no dinner. Because they ate his food.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's pissed.
Yeah.
Let the little baby be pissed.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is there basically a power line gets knocked down. So.
Is it that windy in Chicago? I don't know much about Chicago.
It's not called the Unwindy City. And so.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You need to edit that out because our listeners don't need to know how fucking stupid I am.
Everybody turns off the podcast at this point.
I'm sorry, I'm such a maroon.
Power line gets knocked down, and power goes out, so everybody oversleeps the alarm for the flight, right? And so they wake up, they're all in a hurry to get to the shuttle to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And so because they're all in such a hurry, basically they fuck up the head count. Somebody counts the neighbor kid and thinks it's Kevin. And they go to the airport, and take off from O'Hare to Paris.
So I was reading about former current events, and one of the big discussions that was being held about this movie was how nobody noticed that Kevin wasn't in the van.
In the fucking van.
Exactly. So there was a breakdown from like a very, very old fan site, like a GeoCities kind of thing. And someone said, so when the sister counted the people in the trip, she counted 17 people. Mm-hmm. So an odd number between two vans would mean 8 people were in one van and 9 people were in the other van. But everyone in that family thought that the other van was the one that had 9 people. And that was like the big fan justification for the logic behind it.
Well, I appreciate going to the Wayback Machine and scraping an old GeoCities page.
.cjb.net
to decipher what was going on in Home Alone.
Yeah, the Home Alone fandom was really, really, really
I'd call them stans, but it was 10 years before the song Stan came out, so.
Yeah, so they weren't even a fandom at the time. Yeah. I think we could just call them fans, which is lame.
So not only is the power out, but, like, the phone line gets knocked down, and there's, like, mm-hmm. a scene where an electrician who happens to be in the scene, like, conveniently explains, like, wow, it's gonna be days before the phones are working again.
Yeah, and Catherine O'Hara's like, okay, bye! Yeah. Like, doesn't matter. And they take off, and literally take off into the sky. They run through an airport, not noticing Kevin isn't there.
Right.
They get on the plane. They, instead of giving a ticket to each individual family member, they get there so late that they just give the stack.
Yeah. Pre-9/11.
Exactly.
Much looser security at every airport.
Yeah. And then another reason why this family is so shitty. The adults are in first class while the children are in coach.
So I also have been looking at the internet of Home Alone. And that is one of the things that comes up a lot in discussions of this film.
Everyone on Reddit is pissed.
Yeah. They're pissed about this, and they're pissed about one other thing, which I'll bring up later. But, the adults fly first class, and all the kids fly coach. But the Pizzagate dad justifies it by saying, like, yeah, whatever, they're going to Paris, they'll be fine.
Right, because every child's dream is to go specifically to the City of Love.
The City of Lights, the City of Love. They're going to see the big glass pyramid in front of the Louvre. They're going to learn to smoke. And so, Catherine O'Hara's like, God damn it, I feel like I forgot something. Did we lock the doors? Did we, pump the sump, turn off the sump pump? Did we close the garage doors? And Pizzagate Dad's like, you know what? Forgot to close the garage doors.
I love that he's officially Pizzagate Dad.
and Catherine O'Hara's like, yeah, but I feel like it's, and she's like, Kevin! Famous scream, probably the second most famous scream in the film. And we smash cut back to Kevin, who is waking up in a world without his family. Kevin, who is 8, mm-hmm. who, presumably is like reading chapter books at this point, who knows his entire family was going on a flight to Europe the next day, wakes up and says they must have fucking vanished into thin air.
I wish them away, because I'm amazing.
I made my family disappear.
He legitimately has main character syndrome.
But for him, it's okay, because he's a main character.
Right. but yeah, it's unfortunate that he thinks... Well, first of all, he doesn't, like... need to look at a clock because he's 8. He's not like, I'm gonna justify this here, it's 10 o'clock, they left without me. He's like, no, it was me, I am a magical child. And then he just really owns it and is celebrating the fact that he doesn't have a family
just
anymore,
all over, like almost as if he had a plan for if this happened.
Yeah, he's like, okay, time to really do what I've always wanted to do. First of all, if this were a real Christmas wish and this movie went in a different direction, he wouldn't have woken up in such a nice house.
No.
And he wouldn't have had all these cool things. But, he eats ice cream for all of his meals, and he steals from his brother and breaks his entire room.
Yeah, he watches the classic gangster film Angels with Filthy Souls, which is...
Is that a real movie?
No, it was made up for the film. I also had to look that up.
Yeah, so, you know, what would you do if you had been 8 and were left home alone?
I don't know. It's a really good question. I probably also would have eaten shit.
Right.
I don't think my television taste was refined enough that I'd be like, oh, I'm going to watch the grown-up movies. I would have probably kept watching, like, PBS game shows and cartoons.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair.
I don't know. What about you?
I would cry.
Yeah, sorry. I'd also be sad.
My family fucking forgot me. Are you kidding me? But, I mean, if I had thought, like, a Christmas wish had come true, then it's different.
Yeah.
Then I probably would have, I would have probably, like, used all my mom's makeup and pretty much everything that I do now. I would probably eat really bad. I would probably eat popsicles.
Yeah.
For every meal. And I'd probably go, you know, hang out with my friends, but, you know, it's Christmas time in this movie, so
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, everyone's out of town. And so let's talk about some of the people around Kevin. We did kind of skip over the South Bend shovel murderer. South Bend shovel slayer, sorry. Which, first of all, shout out South Bend. And old man lives next to them, allegedly killed his family, lives by himself.
Right.
So Kevin judges him, and he's maybe going to learn a lesson about that later.
Exactly. I have a question.
Yeah.
So Buzz tells the story, and he says, do you see that can of salt? And he says, that's where he keeps his victims.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't listen to true crime podcasts, but do you preserve bodies in salt?
You can. I mean, I said that a little fast, I guess. But, but I mean, like, let me put it this way.
Oh, God.
You can like, preserve meat in salt.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Ew.
That's what
flesh.
What the pilgrims did.
We all know that we have to do what they did.
But apart from the old man, you have Harry and Marv. Who are systematically breaking into every home on this street since all the families are out on Christmas vacation. They are low-level suburban cat burglars with, I would say, a disproportionate amount of pride in their work.
Yes, they love their job quite a bit.
Yeah.
They have no anxiety whatsoever about making any noise.
Yeah.
Because they're just kind of lumbering around throwing things into a bag.
They have a little thing they do where they clink crowbars before every burglary. I think that's very sweet.
Yeah, you know, I think it's what we really learn is about friendship from them, because they're in it together. They get tortured together by a child. They go to jail together. Spoiler alert. Really, I just appreciate their friendship because they also think each other, like Marv thinks very low of Harry.
Yes.
But Harry thinks very highly of Marv, and I feel like most friendships work that way.
Yeah, that's like a classic kind of frog and toad. The other thing is, like, there's a scene where they're sitting in their van, like, looking at all the, and these are, like, this is North Shore of Chicago, these are really nice fucking houses, and they're sitting in their van looking at all these houses, and Marv, Joe Pesci's character, is like listing out, just think of all the stuff they got in those houses, and just listing off the most dated shit.
VCRs.
It's like VCRs is one of them. I laughed so hard at that.
Speaking of dated appliances, I found my old CD burner in my parents' garage.
Hey,
like, they have it, like, on display where they're like, if you ever need it to burn a CD. I'm like, I think the last CD I ever bought was, oh, God.
Mine was Avril Lavigne's Under the Skin, but go ahead.
I didn't expect that. I think it was Blink-182's self-titled.
The self-titled, yeah, with I Miss You on it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Where are you? Anyway, VCRs.
Yeah, so They're thinking about stealing all that stuff. They're breaking into other homes. They're plugging the faucets and turning them on because that's their calling card. They're the Wet Bandits.
Just to be fair, Marv never agreed to that.
Right. Yeah. It's all Harry. It's all Daniel Stern. Daniel Stern, who I thought for most of my life was the same person as Chris Elliott.
Oh my God, they do kind of look super alike.
Yeah, but they're not. So it is interesting that they have this level of pride in their work. There's a scene, speaking of like dated references, there's a scene where they're like breaking into a house, and like at one point Marv picks up one of the gifts and looks into it because it's a kaleidoscope, which is not a very 2020 gift, and I'm not entirely sure it was a very 1990 gift either.
No, but you know, there's an app for that now.
And then I would say kind of the last bit is that Kevin notices them, right? He sees them in the van. He sees Joe Pesci and his gold tooth. And he remembers seeing Joe Pesci as the cop with a gold tooth. And he's like, wait a second. Something doesn't smell right here.
Something's fucky.
Yeah. Something's fucky? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Do you watch Trailer Park Boys?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That was from that. I'll cut me not getting that reference.
No, we both need to be equal in how dumb we are. You're right. Yeah, so he sees him and he's just like, okay, I gotta move on with my life.
Yeah, but he like, this is an interesting scene to me because he has he still hasn't figured out that his family literally is just going on the trip that they've been planning for months, but he has figured out these guys might be trying to break into my house and I might want to throw them off.
Right. Smart. Which, for an 8-year-old?
Very smart. Very smart.
Wow.
So what does he do, Nadia?
He decides to throw a party.
Yeah.
With Michael Jordan. And no, Michael Jordan, not the real Michael Jordan. A cardboard cutout of Michael Jordan. And when he is exploring the house at the beginning when everything's empty, you kind of see more. I think possibly this means Catherine O'Hara's character might be a designer of some kind because there's mannequins.
Yeah, you see where I'm going with this. Why does he have 8 mannequins in his house?
Yeah. So I noticed because I'm looking into a sewing machine right now. So I noticed the brand of the sewing machine that I was looking into and I started looking around a little more. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of mannequins. That explains maybe why he's scared of going to the basement because there's a little thing about that. But he grabs basically everything that his mom had in her bedroom and in the basement and used all these mannequins and put them on turntables and
a model train. Yeah.
Yeah. Using strings, you know, tied to his little feet. So it looked like there was a big party going on. And the Wet Bandits are like, what the fuck is going on? We thought they were gone.
Yeah.
But they're throwing a party.
And
genius 8-year-old.
He's lucky enough to live in the fucking Laurence Olivier house from Sleuth with all these... all these mannequins in it, but he throws them off, and they're like, oh, shit, well, okay, well, we're not going to rob this house. So they drive off, you know, and he kind of starts to settle in. Kevin starts to get into a routine. You know, he goes shopping for groceries at one point.
Mm-hmm.
He does laundry, even though he's only been, home alone for 12 hours, so I don't know how much... how much fucking laundry he could possibly have.
Which makes me worried that when they were like, you need to pack, that he hadn't done laundry. And so he was going to just pack a bunch of dirty shit.
Yeah.
He's eight.
Someone else packed that suitcase for him. Guys, you're right. You know what? You're right. I'm on Kevin's side now.
Yes, I knew it.
Should we talk about Catherine O'Hara's storyline?
I would love to. So when she freaks out, it cuts away and we come back to the airplane. She is just beside herself, just so upset that she could have done that. She tells herself, I'm a horrible mother, which I don't disagree
understandably
with.
So
yeah, obviously. Yeah. And you know, everyone around her for some reason is like, it's fine. Uncle Frank, besides, you know, wanting to steal the crystal salt shaker from the plane, he's just the worst guy ever. And he tells her, you know, if it makes you feel better, I forgot my reading glasses. Because that's the same. And so, you know, she has to find her way home. And so she tasks everyone with a different thing. So, you know, you call the neighbors, you call your friends so somebody can go over there. I'm going to call the police.
Right.
And in true fashion, the police are useless. Police do
nothing.
Fucking hell.
Yes. I'm sorry. Just, not only do the police do nothing, there is a scene where Kevin, who again is 8, outruns a Chicago police officer when he accidentally shoplifts. And I'm like, yeah, that feels right.
That tracks. Yeah, so these cops send her back and forth. They're like, you know.
I do appreciate that every police officer in the film has a comical Chicago accent.
Oh, and, you know, eating donuts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's great. I loved it. But, you know, no luck. You know, people go over there. A cop goes over there and just knocks on the door once or twice and then leaves. They're not like, hey, Kevin. You know, they're not like, you know, giving any kind of clue.
Kevin, hey, it's the Chicago Police Department. Your mom wants to say she's on her way back.
Yeah, because Kevin is so freaked out by the bandits that he's hiding in his parents' bed because he is afraid that he's going to get fucking murdered.
Yeah.
And the cops can't, you know, do their job
right.
And just stay there until somebody opens the door.
Go ahead.
The cop says, tell her to check her kids again. That's, like, she's wrong.
That's what's so nuts to me is, like, they just bang on the door, nobody answers, like, he's probably dead, and then just go home.
They're like, tell her that she's counted her own children wrong. Oh, my God. Chicago PD, gaslight.
Yeah, that's okay. There's only, like, 4 horrible Chicago PD news stories from, like, literally this morning that I could cite about how, like, they haven't gotten better since Home Alone.
For this fictional neighborhood.
So Catherine O'Hara is like, motherfucker, it's a PG rated movie. She doesn't say that, but she's like,
right.
I am gonna get my way back to Chicago come hell or high water. And so she flies standby. She like trades her earrings to people at one point.
Hold on. You're forgetting that Pizzagate dad is like, we're in Paris.
Yeah,
like,
let's just tired. Chill, man. He's like,
the kids are tired. Let's go to the hotel. And she's like, absolutely not.
I have a very important business meeting to get to.
It's ridiculous. So they're, they go to their hotel or wherever they are. Mm-hmm. And she stays and, you know, tries to get on those standby. And as you said, she, you know, gives away her earrings and all these different things.
She eventually makes it back to Scranton, PA. That's as close as she can get. And at this point, you can rent a car, like, is what I'm going to say. It's a long drive, but you will be there in less than 24 hours with stops. So
right, of course.
At this point, rent a car if you can't get a flight. But she's, you know, screaming at the airline lady. She's trying to...
Is her name Karen? What's her name?
I don't... Hang on. Let me look it up. Let me move my really handwritten great. Notes here.
Analog.
I don't think it is. There's no way it's Karen.
It would be really amazing if it was.
It's like, though. did this movie predict Karen?
Kate. Her name was Kate. God damn it. It was so close.
Wait, what was it?
Just a few letters
off.
Oh,
it's Kate. Kate McAllister, yeah. So, rest in peace. Walks up to her and is like, hey, I'm the polka band guy that,
legend.
You know, is in every airport.
Yes.
And, yeah, let me do some polka riffs for you real quick. And, you know, it's John Candy. He can riff all day if he wants to.
let me do some polka riffs real quick.
And he's like, me and the Kenosha Kickers are driving back to Wisconsin.
And I would watch it. If there was like Chicago, a deleted scene that was 30 minutes long, I would have watched it.
And so Catherine O'Hara has a way home. Meanwhile, back
so
in
nice.
Hersher, Illinois, Kevin is decorating the tree. He's setting up for Christmas. And Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern are trying to figure out what the fuck is going on with this house.
Yeah. But, unfortunately, they find out that he's home alone.
Best part of the movie.
I loved that part. I clapped.
Joe Pesci looks at Daniel Stern, like it finally dawns on him, looks at Daniel Stern and goes, he's home alone. And Daniel Stern looks at the camera and says, now that's risky business. And so...
Well, Kevin sees the reflection of Joe Pesci in his ornament.
Yes.
And starts to freak out and is like, Dad, you know, come help me. But, you know, the game is over.
Yeah, they've pieced it together.
Yeah, so...
So they say, in the loudest possible voices...
We're gonna come back tonight at 9 p.m.
9 p.m. on the dot. We will be back here to rob this house.
And now Kevin knows their plan. But guess what? He has a plan of his own.
And like every good plan, it begins with him visiting Santa and going to church.
I don't know. So, okay. Because he thinks he is a magical boy.
Yeah, he still thinks that at this point, by the way. Sorry if that's not clear. He hasn't figured out where his family is.
No, no, that's why he goes to see Santa, because he's like, I made this Christmas wish. The only person who could clearly undo it is Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. And so he goes up to this Santa impersonator, because he knows, you know, how it all works, mm-hmm. and that this particular Santa is, you know, he's working for the real guy. And he's like, look, you gotta bring my family back. And that Santa gets so fucking bummed out right before he goes
but
to the party.
But imagine, like, you're doing this temp gig. to like pay your cable bill, and you're like, whatever, you know, kids walk up and they're like, I want a PS5, and I'm like, well, you need to be a good boy, you know, type of thing. And then this last kid comes up after you lock up, he's like, can you bring my family back?
And he's like, let me give you a Tic Tac. It was really great. I loved it. And then, you know, then he goes to church.
Yeah.
Because
it's Christmas. It's Christmas. And this is kind of where Kevin starts to realize he feels shitty without his family there for Christmas.
His mom was unfortunately correct.
He's seeing other families in the windows. He's like seeing all this like warm, happy feelings in these other houses. And he's like, I'm alone by myself. And I'm actually scared because men are coming to break into my house at 9 o'clock, as they loudly announced. And...
So the next possible place that I will feel safe is a church. And you know what? He's right. Sometimes when I'm in a city, I don't know. Like, I took a East Coast tour, mm-hmm. and I ended up in Providence, Rhode Island, and it was really fun. But I was very unfamiliar with that area, mm-hmm. and my friend was at work. And so I was just walking around, and I ended up hanging out inside a church. It was actually really comforting.
You can see some lovely architecture. It's quiet. They usually have beautiful. A very clean bathroom.
Yes. So I get it. I get why he goes, but a scary turn of events. His fucking murderer neighbor is there.
South Bend Shovel Slayer is there.
He's not, like, burning, so something must be.
Something's there. And South Bend Shovel Slayer, like, walks up to him. You know, they're just sitting there. It's not, there's not, like, a service or anything. By the way, Stacy, as we were watching this film, was like, do you know what that church is? Because she knows I spent a lot of time in churches on the North Shore, and I'm like, well, it looks like Sacred Heart and Wilmette. So I looked it up, and it is Trinity United Methodist in Wilmette. So I was off by like a block.
Wow. Okay. Amazing. What's the difference between a Catholic church and a Methodist church?
I don't know. I am not an expert on Methodism by any means, so I will just go ahead and say the Methodists are cooler by default.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
And so, but gorgeous church, he's sitting there, he's watching the choir perform, and the old man walks up to him and says, hey, can I sit next to you? And Kevin says, sure, I guess so. And the old man is like, you know, you don't have to be afraid of me. You know, I'm just your neighbor. I'm not gonna hurt you. And they get to talking about their families, and this is the tug at the heartstrings moment.
Right. And Kevin, you know, tells him, you know, you got to get over your bullshit because family is the most important thing.
Yeah, and because that's the thing is the old man has bullshit with his family.
Yeah.
He had a falling out with his son, and he doesn't talk to him anymore. And so because of that, he doesn't see his granddaughter anymore. And that's why he's in the church. He's watching his granddaughter, who's practicing with the choir.
Yeah, it's a really sad thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, instead of this adult being like, so what's going on with you? He's like, let me tell you, main character.
Yeah, about my shit.
Yeah, let me have main character syndrome real quick.
Yeah.
And not know that you're home alone at your house, that your parents disappeared because of a Christmas wish.
Yeah. Like, you know what else Kevin could have said at this point was, hey, you seem like a safe adult. Will you call the police for me?
Right. No. Of course not. He just says, you know, you got to get over it. Call your son. The bullshit isn't worth it. And the old man's like, okay, well, you should probably get home now. Like, it was that fast of a transition.
As soon as Kevin started offering constructive feedback, the old man was like, isn't it time you left?
Yeah. Yeah, so Kevin does. He runs home, and he's like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm defending my
home. My house. Because this is my house. I have to defend it.
Yeah, and then we see the first, or no, this isn't the first montage, by any means.
No, but it
is like the seventh.
It is a montage.
Yes, it's a very good montage. He has a whole map of the house planned out of how he's going to protect his home.
Yeah, a battle plan. He's heating up irons. He's hanging paint cans from strings, setting up tripwires, putting sharp things on the floor. Earlier in the film, he accidentally knocked over his brother's terrarium, which held its tarantula. Ugh. And so we've been
the
worst seeing
part of the movie for me.
Been seeing Chekhov's spider kind of all throughout the house, throughout the film, and so we're seeing that happen, and then we get to I think my favorite part of the film, and definitely one of the most hotly debated parts of the film on Reddit, which is where Kevin says, there's burglars coming to my house at 9, I'm gonna start making dinner at 8:57.
Right, and he never gets to eat his little macaroni and cheese. First of all, there's a lot of dairy in that meal. He's got milk and macaroni and cheese. That kid is going to be really sick. And he's just right about
to... Oh, yeah. Oh, you got a battle plan? Does it include 20 minutes to shit, Kevin? Because you're going to need 20 minutes to shit.
It's so upsetting. It looks good. It's one of those microwavable things, but it actually looks really good. And he can't eat it because they're there right on time. Because as we all know, burglars are nothing but punctual.
Very punctual. Very punctual. Just. But yeah, he's like, let me microwave this dinner. 8:57. I'm going to eat close to 9 p.m. because I'm a fucking Spaniard. And... yeah, let me just sit down.
I knew that this was going to be what Reddit debated, yeah. But I didn't say it. And I was going to say, is it because he didn't get to eat his macaroni and cheese? But it's for a better reason.
Let me sit down. And before I start eating, I'm going to say grace. Definitely going to say grace. Can't leave that out. And, burglars are here. I guess I'm just going to do this all in an empty stomach. Ah, well.
It would have been really cute if he, like, took, like, a bite and then, like, ran, you know? Yeah. But I just really want a child to eat. I'm the mom friend.
So before we get to the break-in, kind of one last piece I want to bring up, which is Catherine O'Hara is riding in the polka van with John Candy and his band. They're playing polkas continuously. Kind of sounds like someone's idea of hell, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're in the back of, like, a moving truck, not even, like, a van.
Yeah. And they bond, Catherine O'Hara and John Candy bond over basically being shitty parents.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, how do you as a mother face that? Mm-hmm. You forgot your own child and then were in Europe and then had to come back.
I will give that to Catherine O'Hara. That's a tough one to overcome.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, she confides in John Candy that she feels like shit, and John Candy's like, we're all really bad parents. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy doesn't even know his kids' names half the time. This guy hasn't even met his kids. And that's supposed to make her feel better. And it really doesn't.
Yeah, somehow it doesn't work. So, climactic scene. First and foremost, we need to get this out of the way. The original plan was for Harry and Marv to rob the house because they thought nobody was there.
Right.
Now they know there's an undefended child there. So is the plan to murder him?
Not at first.
Okay. It clearly turns into that.
Yeah. You know what? I think there is the potential to use Kevin for ransom.
Oh, that's a really good point.
And they could get a lot of money from that, yeah. Obviously. So, you know, there's the potential of two different jobs in one house, okay. Which is getting all their VCRs and getting their child. But it does not go that way.
It does not go that way. So Kevin has this series of booby traps, and you have probably seen the movie. You have probably seen these scenes. This is just the most basic slapstick guy getting hit in the face comedy. Again, it's a movie for children, and I will be honest, there were several parts where I laughed out loud.
Oh, I laughed so hard. I laughed really hard at when Joe Pesci burns his hand on the doorknob.
Doorknob's good, yeah.
With the M, yes. Monogram on it, and then later trying the other door and then just tapping it gingerly because he's scared of it. I really love that.
I like Daniel Stern slipping on the ice in the staircase. That part's not funny, but then he goes in the basement and gets whacked in the face with an iron. And I think he gets burned with something, so he runs back out and he slips again. And the callback to him slipping the second time really got me.
That was really good. And the best part is watching the fake feet that they give him just sliding around. Because he had to take his shoes off going
up the stairs because there was tar on the stairs. And then there was an exposed nail on the stairs, so he goes full A Quiet Place.
Why didn't he see the giant nail?
So that's
the thing about Harry is that he doesn't look down.
No.
Because he didn't see the nail.
He's like
he
a cow in that respect.
He didn't see the Christmas ornaments under the window either. That could have easily been avoided if he just looked down when he was climbing in.
Yeah, he abandons the basement entrance, yeah. And climbs in through the window, but he steps on the ornaments, and because he had already taken off his shoes to climb the tar-covered stairs, which Kevin apparently foresaw him doing before coming in a second entrance, he cuts up his feet on the ornaments. When I was watching this with Stacy, she said, like, they really should have done, like, a Mythbusters episode on this movie to just be like, what would have been the part where they actually died?
Right. That's true. Well, I think it would have been the iron.
The iron's falling. Up there. We think if it wasn't the iron, definitely the paint cans in the face. If those were full paint cans, they would have died.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, he just lost a tooth.
Yeah.
His gold tooth.
Loses his gold tooth.
I think there would have been serious brain injuries tripping over the toy cars.
Yeah.
Because they really, really trip. It was like a banana peel. It was like, real? No. That one, I definitely think that the tetanus from the nail in the foot would have done him in.
Oh, you don't think he had his shots up to date?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think maybe even the fall down the stairs. That was pretty brutal.
It was pretty brutal. They were stone stairs. And the other thing is, kind of through all this, Kevin is mocking them, right? And he's like,
right.
Hey, come over here, you big stupid jerks. Type of thing, which is, again, like, if I was 9 years old and shooting a movie, I would love getting to have lines like, hey, I'm over here, you horse's ass, which in my head as a 9-year old was the most vicious curse.
Oh, absolutely. And the best part is that Marv and Harry get so much more pissed off that they just decide they're gonna murder him.
Like, that's what's so insane. They're like, well, I guess we have to, he's seen our faces, one.
Yeah,
he's
gonna have to get
killed. I guess we're going to commit murder.
Yeah, because ransom makes no sense anymore. It has to be murder. And so they finally reach the second landing of the house. It took them a while, though, gotta say.
We've only done burglaries of empty houses. We're low-level criminals, but I think I have it in me to watch the life escape the eyes of a child.
Yeah, I want to maim him first, which he mentions later. So they make it to the second floor, and all Kevin had up was just a string to trip them, and Marv falls down. Oh, this is also after he's been tarred and feathered, also.
Yeah.
And he falls down, and then Harry falls down, and he finally grabs hold of Kevin, and you're just like, oh, fuck. He's about to get murdered by two burglars, but Chekhov's tarantula.
Chekhov's spider comes. Kevin grabs him, puts it on Daniel Stern's face. Great reaction from Stern, I think.
So good.
Great scream.
What a genius.
Great scream. Master of the craft. And eventually, I think Pesci gets knocked unconscious at one point. And we get to my favorite gag in the movie.
The spider on the chest.
Spider on the chest. which is Pesci wakes up from being unconscious. The tarantula is on his chest. He doesn't know that. Daniel Stern is standing over him, holding a crowbar, intending to crush the tarantula, but holding the crowbar just saying, Marv, don't move. And
Pesci's like, what's going on? Yeah.
Anyways, it ends with Pesci getting hit in the chest with a crowbar.
But by then, Kevin has plenty of time to stand at the window for 30 seconds.
Goes on a zip line to the treehouse. They chase after him on the rope. He cuts the rope, which they really should have seen coming. At some point, he actually calls the cops. Phones are back up. And then he runs to the...
He calls the cops and gives the wrong address.
Well, he gives the neighbor's address. Because the idea is to lure them to the neighbor's house.
Yes.
He goes to the neighbor's house, but they... Basically, they catch up with him, and they're like, we're literally going to torture and murder you, a child, right now. And then, who saves the day?
The murderer guy.
The South Bend Shovel Slayer.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, he knocks them unconscious with his shovel. That should have been Chekhov's shovel. Just so you know.
There's multiple Chekhov's things in this fucking movie.
Yes. Yeah, so
John Hughes is nothing if not a master of three-act structure.
Right. But, okay, so the shovel guy takes Kevin. He's like, let's get you home. And instead of, you know, calling CPS or anything, he's like, you're going to be home at your house alone, and I'm going to go be at my house.
Yeah, I actually reconciled with my son, so I'm going to hang out with him.
I got plans. And so Kevin has to just kind of watch the wet bandits get taken away by the cops, and he is actually really sad that now he really is home alone.
Yeah. Also, the wet bandits apparently unarmed the whole time.
Right. And apparently they, you know, turning on the faucets was their calling card, but now the police know exactly how many places they've burgled, and so... The charges just keep racking up.
Yeah. But let's get to the final scene here, because I also have questions about this.
Yeah. So Kevin puts on his little red pajamas and his little green robe.
It's Christmas morning.
It's Christmas. Yeah. He put out cookies and milk for Santa, but Santa never came. And he is really sad that everything his mom said was true. He feels really bad that he wished his family away. Because he's a magical boy.
So, he is, like, I don't know, wandering through the house, and his mom comes in the front door. She makes it home on Christmas morning. She's yelling, Kevin! Kevin! And Kevin hears her voice. He's like, Mom? And, you know, it's a big house, so it takes, like, 2 full minutes for them to fucking find each other. But
right.
They see each other, and Kevin's mom is like, Kevin, oh my God, I'm so glad you're okay. And Kevin just glares at her, like, because he wants to guilt her a little bit.
Yeah, even though he wished her away.
Yeah. And then she says, Kevin, I'm so sorry. And he gives her a big smile and he hugs her. And then the rest of the family pours in.
Yeah, so she went through all of for nothing, because they took the flight, like, the next day and got there at the same exact time. It's great. And then Pizzagate dad is like, oh, Kevin, you're okay. You did laundry. You went to the store. You're a funny
guy.
That
line is so fucking weird to me. It's like, you bought milk. What a funny guy.
And then they're like, let's go into the kitchen and make food.
Yeah. And we have...
I would be just absolutely beside myself trying to console my child and apologize for leaving them alone.
Other thing, Kevin never volunteers any information about what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, they were like, what were you up to? He's like, I was just hanging around. He didn't say, hey, I had a really traumatizing weekend. Like,
somebody tried to break into the house. There's a police report with my name on it.
Yeah, do you think that they ever, like, learned about what had happened?
It's a great question. I don't know the answer because I've actually never seen Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Oh, that's a great one.
The only thing I know about the film is that our current president has a cameo in it. And yeah. The John Mulaney bit about how you can't get lost in New York because it's a grid system.
Right. Just up one over two yeah. to the left, you bitch. Something like that. I forgot.
Oh.
Yeah, so then the movie fucking ends. Oh, wait. So Kevin sees the shovel guy with his family. Mm-hmm. And that was the part where I kind of teared up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't tear up when Kevin's family got back because I was like, fuck
yeah,
them.
I,
but the other
you've
guy,
brought me around yeah. on Kevin's family. But
that's right.
Yeah, I will say the old man thing, I mean, it does kind of come out of nowhere, but also I will take that over stretching the film to 2 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was already a little long.
Yeah. So speaking of people who may have thought the film was a little long, I'd like to share a review with you, Nadia. This is, you said 1990 was the year that Entertainment Weekly started?
Correct.
Well, as it happens, I have the review from Entertainment Weekly here, which is, of Ooh. Course, by Owen Gleiberman, who is a longtime critic. I think he's in Variety now, but he wrote for Entertainment Weekly for, like, at least 20 years. Okay, so he, you know, you and I talked about this film for the past hour or whatever, and we had fun, right? This was
yeah.
this movie was all right. Like I said, it's for children, but it's not terrible.
I think it's one of the better Christmas movies for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I would watch it again yeah. multiple times.
So let's see what Owen Gleiberman thought.
Oh God.
John Hughes started out making fresh, witty entertainment for teenagers like 16 Candles or The Breakfast Club. But in the last few years, he has turned into a brazenly cynical audience manipulator. His latest sure-to-be-a-hit comedy is about a rambunctious little tyke, Kevin McAllister, whose suburban family accidentally leaves him behind when they take off for a Christmas trip to Paris. The movie, written and produced by Hughes and directed by Chris Columbus, succeeds, at least for a few scenes, at tapping into the universal terror and exhilaration of being left alone in an upper-middle-class home stuffed with leisure-time goodies. Hughes, though, can't resist turning Home Alone into a sadistic festival of adult bashing. When Kevin is set upon by a pair of bumbling thieves, the kid proceeds to defend the family castle by rigging an elaborate series of booby traps. The movie devolves into an egregious Three Stooges pain fest. We're meant to giggle and clap along with Kevin as the crooks get their heads singed with blowtorches and walk barefoot on glass. Then, since this is the holiday season, we get incongruous scenes of Christmas spirit, family reunion toastiness, and also a bit in which the lonely old man next door is reunited with his family, who are wheeled in from out of nowhere for a teary climax. By then, Hughes is pulling our strings as though we'd never learned to do anything else.
Wow. Vicious.
Yeah, I like Gleiberman too, but I feel like he was a little harsh on a film for children.
Yeah, you know, is there a movie about an adult that hates children? Because he probably loved it.
I will cross-reference movies where adults hate children. I guess The Witches.
Yeah. No, you know, I think I understand the whole idea that it was, like, somewhat manipulative because the emotional parts were contrived.
Oh, extremely contrived, yeah.
That wasn't the point. The whole point was that fun slapstick shenanigans. And also seeing a kid, I think if you're 9 and you're like, yeah, I also would, you know, eat ice cream for dinner. But then eventually, you know, my stomach would hurt and I needed to get a toothbrush. You know, like that was as realistic as we could get. Mm-hmm. But then you get to, you know, burglars and a shovel guy. You know, just let us have fun, Owen, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, why you gotta be such a killjoy?
Yeah. Well, Common Sense Media wasn't much different, honestly. A lot of parents especially were really anti this movie. A lot of it was the profanity. They didn't like that Kevin called the Wet Bandits a horse's ass. Mm. A lot of them thought that it was too slapsticky, which, you know, they feel no joy. But I got two adult reviews and one kid's review. The first was a parent of a 9-year-old who gave it 1 star. He says, funny if leaving a child behind and maiming adults is hilarious. So this guy also took the stance of, you know, being on the side of the adults. This is definitely not a movie for younger children. Shocked that this is labeled as having a good message. A little boy is forgotten by his parents and wards off home invaders with violent booby traps from the 1940s akin to Wile E. Coyote cartoons. If you think a real person getting a hot iron slammed into their face is something that you want your children to emulate, go for it.
Yeah. When,
no one's gonna do this.
When will people finally think about the cat burglars?
Justice for the Wet Bandits, yeah, is all I have to say. They were, you know, gonna murder the child, but it's fine. A parent of a 3-year-old actually gave this 5 stars, so I wanted to be a little fair. They said this film couldn't really be made today because no studios would have the guts to make it. This is a beautifully structured film that not only shows a kid overcoming his fears, but also portrays him helping an older man with his own family. Highly recommended. This one is pro Kevin.
I'm gonna say, like, I was joking when I said, why won't people think of the Wet Bandits? But I'm not joking when I say, I don't think making this film is necessarily an act of bravery.
No studios would make it today. They don't have the guts. That's
it's like only A24 would pick this up now.
Okay, the last kid review, it was really long, so I only took the last sentence or two. They're 9. That says, this movie tells me if I have no family, your family going to Paris is like your family disappearing. And it's hard to handle unless you are super smart and have a smart plan. So we got one review that was in, that was pro Wet Bandit, one review that was pro Kevin, mm-hmm, and this last one is pro families disappearing. But you gotta have a plan. Just always being prepared. Maybe they're a Boy Scout.
Well, that's. That is a lot to think about.
So now I have to ask, who do you think is the real villain of this movie?
So, and I have 3 options, right? It's either Kevin, yes, Kate, or Harry and Marv.
Yeah, well, you know the whole internet thing of how Kevin is a psychopath?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a young psychopath? Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Yeah, so, you know, you could take that stance, too, if you'd
like. I don't think Kevin is the villain. I think Kevin is acting rationally in self-defense.
Okay.
I don't think there's a single jury in the world that would convict Kevin McAllister.
He's too charming.
He is very good in this. I did like his performance. I do, you know, maybe I'm just a dumb, square, fucking 30-year-old, I'm not 30, I'm 33, 33-year-old dad, but I think actually the bad guys are the actual bad guys. I think it is Harry and Mark.
Okay.
Because they're the ones who, like, we're gonna rob this house because nobody's home. Oh, a kid is home. Oh, we're gonna break in and take our chances with the kid. Like,
right.
I think.
And then murder
that's
him.
Villainous. I think Kate acted out of stress.
Right.
She overslept. She had a stressful evening. It's not good, but I think she acted out of stress.
What about Pizzagate Dad?
Now, Pizzagate Dad, you know, justice is still coming for him.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm landing.
So that was what I was going to ask. Where did you land?
I'm waiting for the gavel to fall on Pizzagate Dad because, you know, this is a CPS case, 100%. But also, I think it's very interesting that he didn't care for most of the movie. Like, he wasn't as emotionally charged as the mom. So I feel like he's another shitty dad, and so I automatically make him a villain.
Catherine O'Hara's performance is great. Obviously, she's a great actress, but it's also a very believable reaction from a mother. She's humiliated, she's mortified, and she wants to, she will literally do whatever it takes. She will beg whoever she has to make things right. And the dad's just like, it'll probably work itself out.
Yeah. The fuck? That's kind of, you know, the obvious choice is the Wet Bandits, but I think there's a sleeper villain.
Yeah.
And I think if there was some, if there was some kind of sequel, you know, it would be like the police.
Well, there were like four sequels to this movie.
No, I mean, like, if there was like a realistic one where it's like, you know, the police coming to be like, so we're here to follow up on this case. And they're like, what the fuck? It's like, there's a court date for these guys called the Wet Bandits, and we need somebody to testify.
Yeah, Kevin is, you know? Kevin is subpoenaed as a witness.
Yeah, and then also, is did Kevin commit any crimes? Or is it all under self-defense?
I think it's all self-defense. I think it works.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not an attorney. But
can you imagine? We get an attorney just for this last witness.
Yeah, but they're like, no, we need Kevin to testify. And also, sir, we have a warrant to look at your hard drive. And then the dad immediately just dives out the window.
Maybe, okay, if we're looking at this from a feminist lens, what if Kate and her designs, because it's implied that she might be a designer, is the reason why they have that house?
Oh, so she's the breadwinner and the dad just...
Fucks
dad's just a piece of shit. He's the Jason Bateman in Juno character.
Yes, exactly.
He's like, I just want to move back to the city and hang out with my band.
Yeah, I just want to play some gigs.
Yeah.
Okay. I could see Pizzagate.
I could see him doing that and being into Pizzagate. Yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, and you know, he likes to fish. We know that.
That's
right. That's the only other,
that's
like,
a euphemism.
Trait.
So...
did we learn any lessons? Do you think that this movie aged well? I think it's fine.
I think it's dated, but it's fine. Yeah, it's would say the lesson I've learned is have a plan for if my family disappears.
Because I've made a Christmas wish. Well, now we have to see Lost in New York for our next Christmas episode.
Yeah.
It's going to have to happen.
Yeah, okay. So we'll see you guys again in a year. And then also for our next episode.
Right. There's stuff in between
the two Home Alones. But probably should have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Leave us a review. Subscribe to the podcast. We love you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. We'll see you for the next episode.
Bye.
Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song. With joyful ring, all caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they pound, raising their sound, for him and theirs, telling their tale. Gaily they ring, while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here. Ding,
merry, merry, merry Christmas, merry, 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 merry Christmas, one on this end, all without end, their joyful tone to every home.